This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Which Way Home by Danielle Garrett, narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. It's strange how a place can change so much and yet look exactly the same. The last time I'd stepped foot inside the Seattle Haven, the secret community hidden somewhere between the human and supernatural worlds, it was the place I called home. Now, standing on the main street that wound through the heart of the city, I felt like a complete stranger. During my year of banishment, I'd grown detached from my old life inside the busy city. Magic pulsed through the haven, an undercurrent of all the powerful forces and beings that walked the glittering streets. In the past, that swirl of power would have excited me. Now it was overwhelming and confusing. Then again, the reason for my trek to my former home wasn't exactly cause for celebration, and undoubtedly added to my anxiety. In less than 24 hours, I'd be standing before the powerful Haven Council, waiting to see if I would ever be allowed to practice potion magic again. My lawyer was confident, but his assurance hadn't quite rubbed off on me. My world was spinning as though I'd just stepped off a merry-go-round that had been going 100 miles an hour. However, I was determined to ignore the urge to hurl long enough to have lunch with one of my longtime friends and paranormal party planning extraordinaire, Anastasia Winters. So after stepping off at my city's central hotel long enough to drop off my cat, Boots, and get him settled with a bowl of kibble, I headed out to meet Anastasia at Finnegan's, one of the Haven's best cafes. Their claim to fame was the hearty soups they prepared and served in miniature cauldrons. Old world style. All the charm, none of the barbaric treatment. Not to mention their cherry cider was the best thing to ever come out of a barrel. Walking the streets of the Haven was a surreal experience. All of the shops and restaurants I used to frequent were bustling with witches and wizards, shifters, were-creatures, and goblins. I even spotted a majestic centaur striding down the street. The farther I walked, the more comfortable I became. My anxiety ebbed, and I actually started to smile as I drank it all in, the sights, the sounds, the smells. Beechwood Harbor was populated with supernaturals. I was hardly alone. But there was something about being immersed in it, the freedom of not having to hide what I was. I could let my witch flag fly high and proud. I could send up a shower of pink and gold sparks that would rain down as glittering butterflies, and no one would bat an eye. Still smiling, I turned the corner and veered away from the main street through the Haven's mercantile district to a small cluster of shops. Finnegan's was wedged between a handcrafted potion shop I used to frequent and a bookstore that sold enchanted books that read aloud as the pages were flipped. I had quite a collection of them, as they'd proved to be handy tools to have while doing potion work that required getting a little messy. For some reason, that seemed to apply to most of the ones I made. I stopped short when I rounded the corner. The potion shop was gone. The windows boarded up and dark. I moved closer but didn't see any signs the building was for sale or lease. I cupped my hands and peered inside the dirt-caked windows. The shop appeared dank and grimy, as though no one had been there in quite some time. My heart sank at what the once charming and vibrant shop had been reduced to. I also wondered what had happened to Mrs. Claremont, the owner of the shop. She'd been a widow for nearly a decade, and always kept the shop stocked with carefully crafted homemade potions. She'd run the place single-handedly, but never hesitated to stop and answer my questions when I was first learning the process of making custom potions. I hadn't thought about her in quite some time, but suddenly missed her as I stared inside her abandoned shop. "Holly!" I whirled around at Anastasia's voice and saw the pretty brunette running delicately in her impossibly high stiletto boots. I liked nice shoes as much as the next witch, but I honestly had no idea how Anastasia made it through the day without breaking both of her ankles. She leapt up onto the sidewalk and grabbed me in a tight embrace. "I can't believe you're here," she said, into my long auburn hair as it whipped through the wind. I smiled. And I didn't even have to wear a disguise. She laughed, the sound melodic, like a tinkling wind chime. When she pulled away, she kept her hands on my arms. We'd spoken on the phone many times since my banishment and met for lunch a couple of times in Seattle proper, but the visits had been few and far between. Seattle was over 3 hours away from Beechwood Harbor, so visits usually involved a long train ride and a hotel for the night. Anastasia had officially moved inside the Haven following her big promotion at work, and my banishment prevented me from staying on her pull-out couch. At first, I'd tried to use my Larkspur necklace, but found, after several uncomfortable attempts, that it only allowed me to jump short distances. "How are you?" Anastasia asked, finally releasing me. "How does it feel to be back?" "It's kind of weird," I replied. "In Beechwood Harbor, there's a certain charge in the air, I think from the ocean. My magic responds to it. But here, all the magic energy feels like a collision. I'm not used to it anymore." Anastasia flapped a hand. "I'm sure you'll settle right back in." "Well, I don't know if I should get too comfortable. After all, I'm not sure how long I'll be allowed to stay." Reminded of the vacant potion shop, I craned around and hitched my thumb. "Although that's new. What happened?" Anastasia looked troubled, and she linked her arm through mine. "Come on, let's go order some lunch. It's freezing out here. You'd think with all the magic housed within this haven, we could at least work out how to keep the weather at a stable 75. I frowned at her sudden change of topic, but let her steer me through Finnegan's doors. The owner, Walter Finnegan, greeted us warmly, and for a moment I forgot all about the shop next door. We were promptly seated at a table with a window, and without consulting the menu, ordered two huge cauldrons of soup. While we waited, the owner brought out a still steaming loaf of bread with a thick crust, and we both dug in. "Tell me about work. Still loving it?" I asked, unsure if I should ask about Mrs. Claremont's shop again. Anastasia nodded, her mouth full of bread. I smiled and dragged my chunk through the basil-infused olive oil. "That's good to hear." She wiped her fingers off on a linen napkin and then dabbed at her mouth. "It's been wonderful so far. Planning weddings, especially ones where I can kind of go a little crazy with magic, is so much more fun than birthday parties and retirement shindigs." I laughed. "I'll bet. My calendar is booked for the next 18 months. Solid." A wide smile crossed her face as she leaned in slightly. "However, I could definitely squeeze you and Adam in." I choked on a mouthful of bread and quickly reached for my water glass. Shaking my head vigorously, I replied, "No chance of that, at least not in that time frame." Anastasia pursed her lips. "Why not? I could do so much with your big day." I smiled politely. "Sace, I hate to break it to you, but that's not a super convincing reason to rush into marriage." "Why not?" I arched a brow. "Are you serious? You actually need me to spell that argument out for you?" She held her pout for another moment and then waved it off with a flick of her wrist. "Fine, fine, but I reserve the right to at least a 6-month lead-up when it happens." "When" was more like "if," but I wasn't going to argue semantics with her over lunch. Walter personally brought out our meals, and I smiled gratefully, both for the soup and the timely interruption. Once we assured him the food was to our liking, he bowed out and went back to the kitchen. The small dining room was full of late-lunch patrons, and the steam from all the soup made the air thick and warm and filled with the scent of fresh bread and varied seasonings. Anastasia stirred the contents of her cauldron and glanced up at me. "Tell me about this meeting with the council. Are you nervous?" I swallowed hard. "Nervous is an understatement." Anastasia gave a sympathetic smile. "I can imagine. I had to go before the Haven Council once. It was years ago. A disgruntled client filed a complaint against a touch of magic, and I had to go to provide testimony. It was intimidating, to say the least. Teddy, my lawyer, says that as far as he can tell, the whole thing is more of a formality. But I think he might be glossing over the situation a little bit." "Why's that?" Anastasia asked, cocking her head slightly. I drew in a deep breath. "Because of everything with Gabriel and the past, Teddy says that since my name was cleared years ago, it shouldn't be an issue. But you remember what happened right before Harvey shipped me off to Beechwood Harbor? I was in a jail cell faster than you could say chocolate volcano centerpieces. Not a bad idea. You mind if I jot that one down? Anastasia teased. It would be a riskier version of a fondue pot. I smiled and scooped up another bite of my soup. Obviously, I hope I'm wrong, but I think Teddy might have a tougher fight than he's prepared for. He's from the Los Angeles Haven and has a solid practice there. And sure, maybe some of the council members have heard of him, but I don't think that's going to matter very much when it comes right down to it. There's a bias that follows me around, and I'm not sure they will be willing to hand over a pardon just because I have a flashy out-of-town lawyer. Didn't you say your SPA agent is testifying on your behalf? That's got to carry some weight. I nodded. Harvey promised to be there. I helped him with a case a few weeks back, but he's definitely the wild card factor. Anastasia frowned. I'm sorry this has been such a mess for you, Holly. I can't even imagine. Thanks. I shrugged and took another bite, savoring the blend of spices. Worst case scenario, I'll at least be able to come and go from the Haven. But if I can't open my potions business again, I'm not sure how much good that will do me.
And if you get your license, or at least the chance to apply for one, will you move back? What about Adam?
I don't know yet. We haven't really talked about it. She furrowed her brows.
What would you want?
There are things I've missed about Haven life, I replied, with another glance around the cafe and the occupants of the other tables. But I have a feeling that if I moved back, I might actually miss Beechwood Harbor even more. Anastasia gave a sad smile. I wondered if she'd already been expecting that answer.
I won't beg you to move back, but I will require that you visit more, especially since you'll be able to stay with me in my condo.
Definitely. I'll be happy to be able to shop for potion ingredients in person instead of over the witch's web. There's just no replacing the in-person experience when you're picking out the right fecal salve or pickled silkworms.
Lovely.
Anastasia's face went a little green as she considered her next bite.
Call me crazy, Holly, but I think I'll stick to shoe shopping.
I laughed and broke off another piece of bread.
Fair enough.
We finished our lunches, and after Anastasia out-wrestled me for the check, we headed out of Finnegan's. We stopped at the edge of the sidewalk to bundle back into our coats, and I glanced at the abandoned shop next door. I gestured toward the blackened windows again. So what happened? Is Mrs. Claremont all right? Anastasia sighed.
I don't want to worry you, but this kind of thing has been happening a lot lately. Smaller shops are closing down while new chains move into the area. The chain stores charge half what Mrs. Claremont used to. Personally, I think the charms and potions are a little weak, and forget it if you need something custom, but the supers around here seem to gobble it up.
I shook my head. Don't they realize the kind of ingredients that go into those fast food potions?
If they do, they don't seem to care. The Jewel Box Apothecary has been stocking more custom potions lately. Maybe Mrs. Claremont has been selling hers there. Do you want to swing by on the way back to your hotel?
I shook my head.
No, that's all right. The last thing I need to be worrying about is the future of the potion-making market right now.
I brightened a little and glanced down the street in the opposite direction. You know what I do need, though? Anastasia grinned.
Don't tell me you're still obsessed with lemon clouds.
I laughed and looped my arm through hers. Hey, I haven't had a fresh one in over a year. Humor me. After I stocked up on all manner of sweets and treats at my favorite bakery, Anastasia walked with me back to my hotel. The three-level building had a brick facade with lush greenery that framed the wide stairs that led to the front doors. I glanced up toward the room I'd checked into a couple of hours earlier. The room was sandwiched on the second floor and had a view of the street. I smiled when I spotted a fuzzy orange backside pressed up against the glass. Clearly, Boots was making the most of the last bit of sunlight breaking through the gray clouds.
Holly!
I turned and caught sight of Teddy as he jogged across the busy street, one hand raised in greeting, the other clutching the handle of a leather briefcase. Teddy, hello! His blonde hair flapped in the breeze, and his usually rosy cheeks had even more color from the chill of the late winter afternoon.
"Did you just arrive?"
he asked when he came to a stop. I shook my head. "I checked in a little while ago."
"Teddy, this is Anastasia Winters. We're old friends. Stacy, this is Teddy, my lawyer."
Anastasia smiled warmly as they shook hands.
"Nice to meet you."
"Likewise."
She eyed Teddy skeptically.
"I hope you're the shark Holly's been promised."
"I don't know about that,"
Teddy chuckled.
"Besides, I don't think she's going to have much need for a shark. Things seem to be pretty cut and dried at this point. I can't see one reason why they would bar her from obtaining her license."
Anastasia smiled, but I knew that, like me, she had her doubts it would be that easy.
"I suppose we'll find out tomorrow, right?"
Teddy nodded and shifted the case from one hand to the other.
"Hopefully that's all it will take, but if they ask for further information, it could potentially take a little longer."
After an uncomfortable pause, Stacy smiled and nodded.
"Well, I wish you both luck. Teddy, it was nice to meet you. Please take care of my dear Holly."
Teddy gave a winning smile and brushed a hand on my arm as he started up the front steps of the hotel.
"I'll get checked in. Holly, please let me know when you have a minute so we can go over some last-minute details."
"Of course."
He waved and then disappeared inside.
"He seems nice," Anastasia said once the door flapped closed again.
"He doesn't quite fit the image I had in mind, though. He looks very young."
"Well, that's L.A. for you.
In any case, Evangeline speaks highly of him, and I trust her judgment." Anastasia embraced me.
"I'm sure it will all work out. Like he said, it should be open and shut."
"Thanks, Stacy." Smiling, she pulled away and squeezed my shoulders.
"Call me before you head out of town, all right?"
"I will. Thanks for lunch."
"Anytime."
Anastasia waved her hand, and a sleek black car pulled up at the curb. She'd given up having her own car when she moved from Seattle proper into the Haven. She was within walking distance to her office, and said there was no need to pay the absurd parking fees when there was a plethora of cabs within the Haven. As soon as her cab was out of sight, I released a heavy sigh and headed to the front entrance of the hotel. The afternoon with Anastasia had served as a wonderful distraction from the real purpose behind my visit to the Haven. But in her absence, all of my underlying anxiety rushed back like a tidal wave. Chapter 2. The hotel lobby was warm and smelled faintly like cookies. On my way to the elevator, I noticed a group of men and women, most dressed in business suits, gathered around a slate-tiled fireplace. Upstairs, I bypassed my own room and went straight to Teddy's to see if he had news that would help ease my building sense of panic. He booked two separate rooms for our stay, and the hotel had put them together near the end of the second-floor hallway. I walked to his door and raised a hand to knock, but paused, smiling as the sound of his voice filtered through. He was singing an upbeat song that I recognized but couldn't quite place. It hit me half a second later. The song was one by the popular witch pop singer, Petra. I stifled a laugh as I rapped on his door. Petra's fan base usually leaned toward a younger crowd, and the image of Teddy in his signature three-piece suit singing along with a crowd of teenagers cracked me up. The singing stopped abruptly, and I laughed a little harder when I imagined Teddy's panicked expression on the other side, wondering if I'd heard him. The door flew open a moment later, and a blushing Teddy smiled sheepishly as he granted me entrance.
"Hello, Holly. I hope I didn't cut your meeting short."
Still smiling, I stepped inside and glanced around his room. It was a mirrored layout of my own room. A living space, kitchenette, and round table with four chairs took up the majority of the suite. A short hallway led to the single bedroom and small powder room. The bedroom had its own ensuite bathroom, which I could get used to. Not that Posey would ever allow construction within the Beechwood Manor. If anyone ever tried, she'd probably round up a ghost posse and haunt the general contractor into an early retirement.
"Is your room satisfactory?"
Teddy asked, moving to the wet bar where he'd clearly been mixing up a drink.
"It's perfect. Overkill, actually."
I smiled at him and wound my tangled mess of hair into a ponytail. The wind had done a number on my long tresses. For some reason, just being around Teddy drove me to fidget with my hair or clothing. In his manicured and polished shadow, it was hard not to feel grubby. You really didn't have to book suites. I would have been fine on the fold-out couch at Stacy's house. Teddy frowned at me over his shoulder.
A fold-out couch?
I shrugged. Evangeline, my witch roommate and good friend, had insisted on paying Teddy's fee on my behalf. So while I didn't personally know how much he made per hour, it was obvious Teddy was an extremely wealthy wizard. Judging by the way he dressed and carried himself, he'd never known what it was like to want for anything. Evangeline had met Teddy while she was living in the Los Angeles Haven, working as the high-profile star of a paranormal soap opera. Since relocating to Beechwood Harbor, she had toned down her own lifestyle, although I still had yet to see her wear the same outfit twice. But Teddy was still full-blown L.A. and looked ready to simultaneously walk a runway and commandeer a boardroom.
"Can I pour you a drink?"
Teddy asked me. "Sparkling water with lime, please?" I indulged in a few glasses of spiked cherry cider at lunch and should probably quit while I'm ahead.
"Coming right up,"
Teddy chuckled.
"Please sit."
I took the chair, he indicated, and crossed my legs. He carried the drinks over, handed one to me, and then skirted the marble-topped coffee table to take a seat on the opposite couch.
"Thank you."
Teddy inclined his head and then proceeded to assess me over the rim of his crystal tumbler.
"How are you feeling?"
My fingers twisted together in my lap, warring with one another just as much as the thoughts in my head.
"All right, I guess.
It's good to be back in the Haven."
Teddy nodded.
"I haven't been to this Haven in some time, but I could see myself getting used to it."
I arched an eyebrow, but then a slow smile spread across my face.
"Are you planning more frequent visits?"
Teddy's ruddy cheeks darkened as he dipped his chin.
"Are you and Evangeline..."
Teddy glanced up and then shook his head.
"Evangeline is like a butterfly. She flits from place to place."
"Or from man to man. Actually, more accurately, from wizard to shifter and then back again." Evangeline liked to flirt and be admired. I wasn't entirely sure she intended to ever settle down. But in my opinion, a man like Teddy would be a good fit for her personality. He was stable, dependable, and had the style and polish that matched well with Evangeline's exotic beauty.
"In any case, that's a topic for another day. For now, let's talk about tomorrow," he said,
effortlessly brushing aside the uncomfortable conversation. He set his tumbler on the coffee table and then went to the table near the kitchen. He opened the case I'd seen him carrying outside and retrieved the enchanted notepad he'd used during all our previous meetings. His pen transcribed notes during all of his business conversations. Thanks to some enchantment, the words were written as they were spoken, only to immediately disappear from the page. I wasn't sure how he retrieved the notes, as the pages were blank slates as soon as the conversation ended. It was certainly a secure way of handling his sensitive business, even if it was more than a little mysterious.
"During the flight from L.A., I went back through our previous conversations and have a few last-minute questions," he said, taking his seat again.
He placed the notepad on the table, and the pen went to work, moving as if an invisible hand were scribbling furiously as Teddy continued.
"I know you worked in a potion shop at one time, but when I was building the case notes, I looked it up and couldn't find a record of you ever having applied for a license before."
"That's right. My previous boss wouldn't sign off on any of the apprentice tasks. He barely let me touch potion supplies." Teddy's brows furrowed together.
"What were you doing then?"
"Sweeping, mostly." Teddy nodded slowly, as though trying to fit jigsaw puzzle pieces together.
"What was his reasoning? As an apprentice, you should have been working under his supervision, not doing page work."
"I know." I sighed as I sagged back against the chair like a deflated balloon. "Because of my association with Gabriel and the Ring of Dark Wizards, most shops wouldn't even let me fill out an application. Mr. Keel was the only one who gave me a job, and that was mostly because one of my friends from my academy days is his niece and begged him to hire me. I figured it would take some time to gain his trust, but if I ever gained any ground, I'll never know. I wasn't there all that long before the whole banishment thing happened." I nearly laughed at how flippantly the words sounded. The whole banishment thing had dictated my life for the past year. At first, I'd railed against it and cursed Harvey for giving the order. But after a year in Beechwood Harbor, I found it harder and harder to remain angry about it. The council hearing wasn't even about the banishment order. Harvey had made it clear that his order was unofficial and would only be put in my record if I broke the terms of his deal. The council hearing was to gain permission to apply for my potions license. After a series of unfortunate events made it look as though I'd tried to smuggle a dangerous potion to my ex-boyfriend and Haven anarchist, Gabriel Willows. Which, of course, was completely ridiculous. I was more than content to let Gabriel rot in an SPA prison for what he'd tried to do, and even more so for the way he'd tangled me up in his scheming. That was a web I was still trying to get out of. All I could do was hope this would be my final obstacle to living free and clear of the SPA. Teddy reached for his drink.
I've spoken to Mr. Culpepper, and he's assured me that he will, in fact, be present tomorrow at the hearing, and will give testimony on your behalf, if called forth by the council.
I can't believe this is all really happening, I said, the words nearly a whisper. I'd never been before the council before. The entire idea was surreal. My life had reached a tipping point, and everything could change all over again within the course of the next few days.
Believe it, Holly. We'll have you back at the cauldron in no time.
Teddy smiled and snapped his fingers. The pen stilled and then slowly dropped down to rest on the notepad. The last words sunk into the glossy surface and melted like candle wax until the page was blank again, not even a trace of pressure scratched into the thick paper.
Do you have any last questions for me?
I swallowed hard. There was one question in my mind that I hadn't voiced to anyone. I drew in a deep breath, gathering the strength to finally utter it. What if they turn me down? I asked with a cringe. What if they refuse to give me a potions license, or even the opportunity to properly apprentice and apply a year from now? What am I supposed to do then? It wasn't a question Teddy could really answer with any surety. Although, to his credit, he tried. He leaned forward, hands clasped together, and said,
I don't think you have to worry about that, Holly. I've tried a lot of cases, and I see absolutely no room for this thing to go sideways. However, if things don't work, we have the right to petition for a second hearing.
I nodded slowly. I appreciated his confidence, but I couldn't quite wrap myself up in it, at least not fully. I missed potion work more than I'd ever expected. It was more than a profession or trade. It was part of my being, my identity. To have it taken away was like having part of my heart go missing. It wasn't about the lost customers, although that was a concern too, or the whispers within the supernatural community in Beechwood Harbor. It was far bigger than that. Teddy pushed to his feet, and I followed his lead.
I'll come collect you in the morning. Try to get some sleep.
Thank you, Teddy. For everything, I replied, not bothering to point out the unlikeliness of sleep. Now, if I could whip up a sleeping potion, it would be a different story. Teddy knocked on my door bright and early the following morning. As expected, the night had stretched on painstakingly hour by hour without the relief of sleep. Even Boots was restless and moody. Of course, that could easily be remedied with a bowl of tuna fish. My problems weren't quite as easy to solve. After saying goodbye to Boots, I followed Teddy out of the hotel and into a waiting sedan. Neither of us said much on the ride to the council hall. He started to ask about my night, but stopped when he saw the expression on my face. Harvey Culpepper was waiting for us in the hallway outside the appointed courtroom. I'd seen Harvey in a suit before, but seeing him standing there on the steps all dressed up and knowing it was for my benefit warmed my heart. We'd had our ups and downs, mostly downs, but that was in the past. He wore his usual grim expression as we approached.
"Holly, Teddy," he said,
nodding up at each of us. Harvey was a goblin hybrid and stood no higher than my hip, even shorter when compared to Teddy, who had a few inches on me. But Harvey carried himself in a way that made his stature easy to forget. "Hello, Harvey," I said. "Thank you for coming today. It really means a lot."
"A deal is a deal,"
was all he said. A pall hung in the air, as though we were meeting at a funeral instead of a council hearing. I watched Harvey out of the corner of my eye as we entered the council hall. Did he know something I didn't? A large wooden clock occupied the majority of the wall behind the reception desk, where a team of exhausted-looking clerks worked to herd and direct the incoming lines of people. I was surprised by the amount of activity. Had the Seattle Haven become such a chaotic place that there was the need for that many people coming and going from the main legal building? Harvey, as though sensing my question, said,
"There is a high-profile case being held this week in the Grand Hall."
Teddy glanced down at him.
"The Praxel case, right?"
"Praxel?" I asked when Harvey nodded. "What is that?"
"Don't you watch The Witch Wire?"
Harvey asked me with a sharp look. What can I say? After a year of banishment, I've fallen out of the habit of watching Witch Wire every night. Harvey bristled and tugged at the lapels of his jacket. Teddy stepped in.
"Bill Praxel is a businessman who owns a chain of variety shops throughout West Coast Havens. He's being tried on charges related to his questionable business practices."
"What does that even mean?" I asked, not bothering to look at Harvey.
"There are quite a few charges. The catalyst and reason why the council hearing is happening here in the Seattle Haven is that a witch who ran a potion shop was bullied into selling her shop. She claims she was threatened and even assaulted by a hired mercenary before finally agreeing to sell to Mr. Praxel."
"Wait, was that witch Mrs. Claremont?" I asked, suddenly realizing Praxel must be the man behind the chain of shops Anastasia had told me about the day before. Harvey nodded.
"Yes. At her urging, we launched a full investigation and came up with half a dozen other victims. The hearing started a few days ago, and it's attracted the attention of the media."
He didn't sound particularly happy about that part. As one of the key figures in the crimes division of the Seattle branch of the SPA, it had no doubt buried him in a huge pile of red tape. I glanced at Harvey, noting the tightness in his expression. Guilt surged through me when I realized he was spending valuable time with me instead of on such an important case. I reached out and brushed his shoulder. "I'm sorry for snapping at you, Harvey. I'm just edgy." We'd had our differences, a mountain of them. But somewhere along the way, I'd moved beyond the anger I'd felt toward him after initially being banished and, most recently, when he dragged me from the manor in handcuffs right as Adam's parents had arrived for Yule Feast. Not the shining meet-the-parents moment I'd been hoping for. As infuriating as I found Harvey's ever-present involvement in my life, I could now see that he truly did have good intentions in his little goblin hybrid heart. The realization smacked me in the face, now that he was minutes away from testifying on my behalf to help me get my life back. It's the little things. "Will Mrs. Claremont get her potion shop back when this is over?" I asked them, as another stream of chattering reporters made their way through the doors.
"I doubt it,"
Harvey said with his signature flatness as he turned his back on the scene.
"She took a crippling financial hit fighting Mr. Praxel before smaller councils for years, prior to his escalation in tactics. I don't think she has the means to get back into business."
My heart twisted. That's awful. The door to the courtroom opened, and a man in a dark suit stepped out into the hall and gave each of us a seething look. Magic pulsed from him, palpable and strong. A blue and white badge was clipped to the pocket on his jacket, identifying him as an officer of the council. Basically a glorified bouncer with an extra dose of legal firepower behind his authority.
"Case number?"
he said, his words clipped. Teddy pulled out a paper with the Haven Council's letterhead at the top, and the guard flicked his hand. A blue pulse of magic swept down the page and then returned to his palm.
"The council will see you now," Step forward one at a time and wait for the scan to complete before proceeding.
I gave a nervous nod and watched as Teddy went first. He held out his arms as though being frisked at a checkpoint, and that same wave of ice blue enveloped him before returning to the guard. Harvey flashed his official SPA badge and was spared the scanning process. I cast an anxious glance at Teddy as I put my arms out and waited.
"You ready?"
he asked, concern etched in his brow. Was it too late to say no? Chapter 3. The bright light from the hallway was immediately snuffed out as the hulking guard pulled the door closed behind me. I stumbled forward into the dimly lit chamber and gawked at the room. It was a stark contrast to the bright hallway we'd been waiting in. If the designers had been going for medieval chic, they'd nailed it. Teddy and Harvey both looked comfortable, barely noticing their surroundings as they led the way to the front of the room. Harvey veered off to the left and gingerly took a seat on one of 8 wooden benches that lined each side of the central aisle. Teddy continued, not stopping until he reached the long table at the front of the room. The guard disappeared behind a side door, and I scurried to Teddy's side. The room was quiet. Too quiet. Every sound any of us made seemed to echo through the expansive room. Iron chandeliers hung from the ceiling, 3 over the council table alone, but it still didn't feel like enough light.
"Ollie, it's all right," Teddy whispered out of the corner of his mouth. "Try to relax. Deep breaths."
I sucked in a shallow breath. It wasn't like me to get rattled. In the last year alone, I'd gone head-to-head with a nasty gargoyle, a chilling, remorseless sociopath, and a pack of power-hungry vampires. A board of crusty old witches and wizards who served as council members shouldn't bring me to the point of a meltdown. All the same, I couldn't quite manage to get enough air. The guard reappeared, followed by 6 robed figures. Teddy shot to his feet, dragging me up with him. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Harvey hop down from his seat on the bench to stand. The council members filed quietly to their seats at the long, elevated desk across the room and took their seats.
"The High and Honorable Haven Council will now hear case number 45268B.
The guard turned about face and stood like a sentry at the side of the desk. I worked down the line, examining each face. There were 3 wizards and 3 witches. Other types of supernaturals were able to hold places within the SPA and other areas of law enforcement, but were prohibited from actually serving as council members. It was controversial within the Haven system. An old, some would say archaic, law. None of the 6 faces staring at me seemed particularly friendly. They were mostly older, with white or graying hair, with the exception of the woman at the very end of the table. She looked to be closer to my age, with long dark curls, a porcelain complexion, and piercing eyes that reminded me of Flurry, Evangeline's falcon familiar. While the others looked at their notes, she kept those dark eyes locked on mine, without blinking. Shiver ran down my spine. The wizard in the middle cleared his throat, and all eyes swiveled toward him.
"Ollie Bolt, according to your petition, you are present before the council to waive your apprenticeship requirements and acquire your master potions license. Is this correct?"
"Yes, Your Honor." Teddy frowned. Apparently I'd been watching too many human cop shows.
"Miss Bolt is indeed here to pursue her master potions license, a right that was unjustly stripped from her 1 year ago after a series of misunderstandings."
The council members all snapped to attention and stared at Teddy. He remained cool, his expression firm but not aggressive.
"And you are?"
The wizard in the center spat at Teddy.
"Theodore Travail, a member of the Los Angeles Haven Justice Department. I'm here to present Miss Bolt's case."
None of the council members seemed too impressed with Teddy's credentials. In fact, all 6 of them looked like they'd collectively swallowed a lemon.
"Well,"
the young witch at the end started, her voice a sickly sweet purr,
"as impressed as I'm sure we all are,
This case seems quite straightforward based on what we've reviewed in the file. Miss Bolt was arrested in connection to Gabriel Willow's circle. I'm sure no one present needs to be reminded just what that particular merry band of misfits was up to. She smiled at her fellow council members. Teddy bristled beside me, and the flicker of hope inside my chest started to sputter.
Miss Bolt was cleared of any connection to the ring's violent plans or the dark magic they were harnessing. She was an innocent bystander, mistakenly lumped in with a dangerous group, an accident that has been remedied. The young witch scoffed.
An accident? That's your best defense, she asked, her dark eyes boring into me.
I straightened, pulling my shoulders back. The charges were dropped. Besides that, I'm not on trial. Am I?
Teddy flexed his jaw and held up a hand.
Miss Bolt is correct. This petition has nothing to do with those unfortunate events of the past. She is here, as a citizen of the Seattle Haven, to petition for her right to acquire her master potions license.
The witch tossed her dark hair over her shoulder and smiled.
I'm not sure how you expect us to untangle the two things. If Ms. Bolt shares these ideologies, the last thing this council wants to do is allow her access to dangerous and potentially dark magic, in any form.
I sighed. I should have known it would come down to the past. I cast a glance at Harvey, hoping he could swoop in and argue on my behalf. He promised to testify to my intentions as well as my skill level as a potion witch. To my dismay, he remained seated, his long fingers folded together in his lap. And even though I knew he must have felt my gaze on him, he refused to look my way.
There are no charges against her. No evidence linking her to Willow's Circle, Teddy stressed.
Then why do I see that she was arrested again in connection to the group, even after Mr. Willows was in an SPA prison?
The witch asked, her teeth flashing like a victorious wolf about to devour a meal.
In fact, it looks like following that arrest, she was banished from all of Haven society. Yet we are supposed to believe she is harmless? Her own assigned SPA agent ordered her unfit for Haven life.
My eyes flashed to Harvey. The arrest was supposed to have been scrubbed from my record. How in the other world had the council ended up with that information? Had Harvey betrayed me? Harvey still refused to meet my eyes, and I bit back the urge to shout his name. Teddy tensed his jaw.
She was questioned in regard to a situation. That is not the same as an arrest. As to the banishment, that was a temporary and unofficial order that bears no weight in this hearing.
The witch clasped her slender fingers together and rested them on the table.
Perhaps I need to put this in other terms. Seeing as how Miss Bolt has been living among the humans for such a long time. Let's see. How does that expression go? Ah, yes. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And simply put, Miss Bolt, there's simply too much smoke hovering over your head for this council to feel it wise to grant you permission to attain a potions master license that would enable you to sell your creations within the Havens. In fact, I'm not sure why we aren't making this banishment a permanent order. It certainly seems to be working. The Willows gang hasn't so much as crossed my radar in the past year you've been gone.
She cast a sidelong glance at the other council members, who silently confirmed her statement. Anger and despair surged up inside me, and clashed together in an explosion of emotion. Tears sprang to my eyes, even as my hands fisted into tight balls at my sides.
This is outrageous, I cried. Why am I being punished for things I didn't do?
Teddy reached out and grasped my forearm.
Ollie, please, he whispered.
I slammed my mouth shut and ground my teeth as he turned back to address the council.
At this time, to clear up the issue of banishment, I would like to call for a testimony. An esteemed member of the SPA and Ms. Bolt's assigned agent, Harvey Culpepper.
Teddy turned, waving a hand to present our key witness, only to find the bench empty. Harvey was gone.
No,
A plea, a whisper, slipped from my lips.
Guess he had something else to do?
The young witch cooed. I stared, transfixed at the empty bench, as the wizard who'd started the proceedings asked Teddy if there was anything else.
Miss Bolt is a noble witch, who has worked to move past the stigma that is inexplicably still clinging to her following the unfortunate events cited here today. She's followed the law of the Haven to the letter, and deserves to use her natural gifts to not only provide a living for herself, but to also help other supernaturals inside the Haven community as well as outside. I would ask that the Council consider this issue thoroughly before dismissing it, based on loose, circumstantial footnotes in her case file. As to the banishment, Mr. Culpepper never intended that to be a permanent order, and I am confident he will clear up any concerns just as soon as he is available.
The council members looked from Teddy to me. They hadn't proclaimed their final decision yet, but I knew it was over all the same. My eyes slid closed. I drew in a long, slow breath and willed the room to stop spinning.
We will call you forth when we have had a chance to examine the evidence. Please, Reginald, escort Mr. Travail and Miss Bolt from the chamber.
The stocky guard swept forward and ushered us back to the hall. When the door closed, Teddy ripped his phone from the pocket of his jacket and furiously dialed.
Where in the other world is that little troll? Someone better be bleeding.
I didn't bother correcting him as to Harvey's species. I was too busy cooking up insults of my own to hurl at him when he was back in my sights. Why had he bothered to make me promises, show up for the hearing, and then vanish midway through? On top of that, somehow the council had gotten their hands on the files he supposedly buried. That was the arrangement we'd made. Well, that he'd made, and forced me to agree to. He'd promised to erase as long as I went peacefully to Beechwood Harbor and never stepped foot back inside the Seattle Haven. If he hadn't tipped off the council, then who had? Teddy snapped his phone shut.
His calls are going to his assistant, Harriet. She claims she doesn't know where he is.
I sighed deeply and dropped my head back to rest on the cool wall behind me. I'm sorry I wasted your time, Teddy. Teddy softened and sat beside me.
It's not your fault, Holly. Harvey is the one who should be apologizing. I didn't quite expect the council to put so much weight on the past, seeing as how none of the charges stuck. But even still, one word from Harvey and this all could have been cleared away.
I nodded. I don't know what I expected to happen here today, but I thought they would at least listen. At first it seemed like it, but then that woman, that witch, who is she? Teddy shook his head.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the Seattle branch of the council. My guess? She's some young blood who was added to the council so they didn't have to cancel the proceedings. See, most of the higher-up council members are tangled up in this Praxel mess.
He gestured across the expansive lobby. The crowds were dispelled now, but I remembered what Harvey and Teddy had said about it before our case was called.
She's obviously trying to make an impression.
Well, she certainly managed that, I deadpanned. She blew a giant hole right through my entire case. Teddy pushed up from the bench.
Wait here. I'll be right back.
He didn't wait for me to agree before scurrying off around the corner. Great, I said, heaving a sigh. Even better. Total abandonment. All I wanted to do was go back to my hotel room, grab a bag of lemon clouds, bury myself under the covers with boots, and read a book. I'd go back to Beechwood Harbor in the morning and start over. Again. Minutes ticked by as I waited alone outside the chamber's door. Teddy came back, looking even more grim than when he'd left.
Harvey's still not answering. His voicemail message says he's out on official business, but who knows what that means.
And without him? Teddy nodded and sat back down beside me.
I'm sorry, Holly. I truly thought this would be an open and closed case.
It's not your fault, Teddy. I squeezed my eyes closed, desperate to hide the hot tears that were welling up.
Thanks for trying. Well, hold on. He patted my shoulder. It's not over yet.
It sure seems like it, especially if that witch has anything to say about it. Before Teddy could assuage my fears, the door swung open, and the same guard appeared. He jerked his chin in the direction of the doorway.
They've reached their final decision.
That was fast. Teddy gulped. I scanned the hall, looking for any sign Harvey was on his way back. But the corridor was empty in both directions. A final glance at the reception desk confirmed he wasn't going to make it. After a moment, I gave up and let Teddy usher me back into the chamber where the robed council members sat behind their table. As we walked in, I noticed most of them refused to meet my eyes. All except for one. The witch at the end offered a wide smile as we took our places at the smaller table. The wizard who'd opened the proceedings cleared his throat.
Ms. Bolt, we've reviewed the notes in the case file and had a lengthy discussion in regard to your request. Unfortunately, we've ruled against your petition. At this time, we cannot grant your request.
Teddy started to object, but the wizard snapped his fingers, and a red ribbon, sparkling with magic, moved in a mesmerizing dance through the air and bound the petition as it rolled up like a scroll. When the bow formed, a hissing sound echoed through the chamber, signaling that the bond was permanent. Bonded. Final.
This is outrageous, Teddy shouted.
Silence,
the wizard shouted, his voice booming like thunder.
The Haven Council has ruled. Reginald, see them out at once.
Reginald strode forward, his face set with determination. He pulled his wand as the council members stood and filed from the room until only the raven-haired witch remained.
Enjoy the human world, Holly, she purred,
before turning to follow her fellow council members from the room. Only when the heavy wooden door shut behind them with a solid thud did I release a curse and a blast of magic that slammed into a chair, blowing it into 100 splintered pieces. Reginald let his own spell fly, and I was thrown to the floor, my wrists instantly bound together. Teddy hurried forward and collected me, holding up a hand toward the guard.
Let her go.
Out, came Reginald's gruff reply. The spell released, and I sprang up from the floor like a boxer in the ring. Magic pulsed at my fingers, straining to be released. But Teddy wrapped one arm around my shoulder and steered me from the room before I had a chance to fire off another spell. Chapter 4.
Are you going to be okay?
Considering the circumstances we'd just walked away from, I found Teddy's question a little odd. I shrugged out of his reach and stalked out of the pristine building that housed the council and made it 3 blocks before I finally slowed down enough that he'd managed to catch up. Thoughts raced through my mind faster than I could process them. Part of me wanted to sink down onto the curb and cry, and the other part wanted to let out a blast powerful enough to rattle the entire haven and the city of Seattle that concealed it. I stopped walking and spun on the heels of my black boots to face Teddy. Deep lines were etched around his eyes, erasing his boyish look, and I realized he was nearly as angry at the farce of a hearing as I was.
I'll be fine, Teddy. I'm sorry I lost control back there.
I flapped a hand in the direction we'd come from.
I understand, Teddy replied evenly.
He slipped his hands deep in his pockets.
As soon as I get back to the hotel, I'm going to file an appeal and a formal complaint.
I shook my head.
Don't bother. Holly, we can't give up.
My eyes drifted over his shoulder and followed the row of shops that lined the main street through the haven. The dull ache in my chest pounded as I drank it all in. The quaint shops with the shiny marquee signs that glittered and sparkled, each one competing for the attention of the supernatural patrons wandering the streets. My gaze settled on a family as they wandered down the sidewalk. A blonde girl clung to her mother's and father's hands, while a small white dog raced ahead of them. The fluffy pup stopped at the end of the sidewalk and suddenly shifted into a black cat, The blonde girl giggled and cheered. She slipped from her parents' grip and bounced in place, clapping her hands. The cat swished its tail and then transformed again, this time into a green lizard with a forked tongue. The girl darted back and grabbed her mother's leg. The father scooped her up and called out to the shapeshifter, who promptly turned into a small boy. The mother raced forward and wrapped a blanket around him because he'd shifted back to human form without clothing. She smiled at her son and scooped him into her arms as they continued down the street. The ache grew sharper as I watched the small family. I dragged my eyes back to Teddy's. "I need some time." Teddy gave a slight nod.
"I'll walk you back to the hotel."
"No, that's all right. I know the way." He frowned, but didn't argue with me. I tried to smile, but it fell flat. I hurried away, moving in the opposite direction as the little family of four. I couldn't watch them anymore. Back in the hotel, Boots greeted me at the door with a series of yowls, only stopping when I gathered him into my arms. I squeezed him as tightly as I knew I could get away with, and then set him down on the couch. As my familiar, he had the innate ability to pick up on my moods and emotions, and his amber eyes shifted to follow me as I paced the suite. I could almost hear the question rolling around in his fuzzy little head.
"It didn't go so well, Bootsy. Looks like I'm going to have to come up with an alternate career plan."
His whiskers twitched.
"Don't worry," I said with a smile. "I'll find a way to buy your kibble."
My cell phone was on the small entryway table, and I grabbed it up on my way back to the couch. I sat down beside Boots, and he burrowed into my side.
"Time to call Adam and tell him the news," I said with a heavy sigh.
On the one hand, I desperately wanted to hear Adam's voice and have him tell me everything was going to turn out all right. But on the other, I dreaded rehashing all the details of the disastrous hearing. He picked up after the second ring and sounded like he'd just finished running a mile. Considering it was barely noon, that wasn't likely. Adam liked to run through the woods behind the Beechwood Manor, but only after dark. When he could shift into his beast form and terrorize the forest as a shaggy dog that was more on par with the size of a grizzly bear than a canine.
"Hey, gorgeous," he panted into the phone. "I've been waiting to hear from you. How'd it go?"
"Are you all right?"
"Me? Yeah. Yeah, I'm good. Just been running around getting stuff done."
I frowned. "That sounds vague."
"Halls, come on. Tell me what's going on."
I drew in a deep breath. "They denied my petition."
"What?"
Adam boomed. I yanked the phone away from my ear. "They dragged up everything with Gabriel and basically said I couldn't be trusted. They're even threatening to make my banishment permanent." Adam swore.
"Yeah."
I sighed and pressed my eyes closed. "It wasn't pretty."
"What about Harvey? Shouldn't his testimony or recommendation be enough?"
"He didn't testify."
"Why not? He's the one who convinced you to go before the council in the first place."
"I don't know. SPA business? He disappeared in the middle of the hearing. In fact, I still haven't heard from him. Teddy found out he was called away, but I don't know why or where."
"You think it was an excuse?"
"I don't know yet. It doesn't make sense that he agreed to testify and help me if he had no intention of following through. Why lie about something like that?"
"But then there was one other thing that doesn't line up."
"Just one?"
Adam said sarcastically.
"To me, it sounds like the whole thing was messed up."
"The council had access to files Harvey said were expunged. When he sent me to Beechwood Harbor, he told me he'd bury the report of the arrest and wouldn't report anything about the potions in my house as long as I left peacefully and didn't come back. He said it was for his own protection, as much as mine."
"What do you suppose he meant by that?"
"I've always assumed he meant that he'd get in trouble if it ever came to light that I was illegally selling potions within the Haven. As my agent, he was supposed to keep me out of trouble, and he figured it would blow back on him if anybody found out that he let me go with a slap on the wrist."
"Banishment is hardly a slap on the wrist, gorgeous."
I nodded. He had a point. I'd never really had a chance to think about it much. I'd been too busy fitting into my new life at the manor and in the small coastal town.
There has to be something else going on, Adam continued.
Well, don't worry. Next time I see him, I'll be sure to ask him all about it. Adam sighed.
I'm sorry the hearing didn't go